You're listening to the Screaming Pods Network.
Hello, Just the Disc listeners. It's me, Brian. So just a quick note about this episode. I'm a total idiot, and I was under the impression I was recording with my microphone on, or my USB mic that I normally use, and for some reason, during the Skype call at the beginning, my mic was not properly selected. So I'm just using the microphone from my laptop, which sounds like garbage. So the first like 5 minutes or so of this episode, I sound terrible. My wonderful guest, Patrick Bromley, sounds good. But then it will kick over into good audio, which I started getting going just a little ways into the episode. So my apologies, but please enjoy this for what it's worth. Patrick is a wonderful guest, so he makes everything better. I just wish I didn't sound like a moron. But enjoy. On with the show.
Welcome to another episode of Just the Disc. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. I have a wonderful returning guest joining me, Mr. Patrick Bromley from F This Movie, the website, the podcast. He's also, you're on Corpse Club somewhat frequently still these days?
Somewhat frequently, yeah.
Another podcast of his you can check out. Anyway, Patrick, thank you for coming back. You've been on the show not since we did the Favorite Discoveries, right? I don't think.
No, that was the last time I was on.
Okay, well, we need to make this more of a regular thing. It's my own stupid fault.
you're very in demand, and you have many guests.
No, very disorganized is the actual scenario. But thank you very much for taking the time and staying up late. I really do appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me.
So what I pitched to Patrick was sort of a themed show. We've got three different labels represented here, but the theme is Private Eyes. So we're going to talk about, in chronological order, Harper from Warner Archive, Gumshoe from Indicator, and V.I. Warshawski from Kino Lorber. But I thought we would start with Harper, which stars Mr. Paul Newman.
My husband's disappeared.
Tried missing persons?
Well, that might mean publicity. Ralph loathes publicity. Besides, he's got an abnormal fear of the police. I simply want you to find him and tell me which female he's with.
Any particular female?
I haven't the least notion. Ralph need never know about this. He'd be sure I was gathering material for divorce proceedings. Actually, I have no intention of divorcing him. I only intend to outlive him. I only want to see him in his grave. What a terrible thing to say.
People in love will say anything.
I used to love him before we were married. But after we took our vows, I had an accident. And that very same week, Ralph started fooling around with a new lady. It's taken me a while to forgive him. A long, long while.
When did your husband...
Don't you want to know what happened to me?
Not necessary. When did your husband disappear?
Yesterday. Our pilot, Alan, flew Ralph down from Vegas. When they reached the airport, Alan put the plane away. When he came back, Ralph had given him the slip.
Any particular reason?
Drunk. I don't like him drunk on the loose. He gets sloppy sentimental. He gives things away. Last time it happened, he gave away a whole mountain. He gave it to some semi-nude religious nut from Los Angeles. You know, L.A. is the big league for religious nuts.
It's because there's nothing to do at night.
If you can find him quickly, I'd be grateful. And if he's with another woman, I'd be... Well, more than interested.
And I'm just going to do what I do, just read the back of this disc here. It says, Paul Newman memorably plays the title role in this box office hit based on Ross McDonald's The Moving Target, the first detective film in Newman's then 23-film career. Harper revitalized the genre. Newman's sleuth chews gum fast and slips out of jams even faster as he unravels a twisted case of kidnapping and murder. William Goldman's clever script throws quips and a parade of La La Land characters Harper's way. There's a woman of means, Lauren Bacall, a gun-toting attorney, Arthur Hill, a poolside gigolo, Robert Wagner, a boozy ex-starlet, Shelley Winters, a jazz junkie, Julie Harris, Harper's estranged wife, Janet Lee, and the unholy order of the Temple of the Clouds, led by the great Strother Martin. Each may possess a clue or a bullet for Harper. So this one is from 1966. And had you seen this before?
No, this was a first-time viewing for me.
What did you think of it, sir?
I really liked it. Cool. I'm a fan of the private investigator genre, and I thought it was so interesting as you read the back of that, because I had read the back of the case also, that they point out that this was the first time Newman had played a detective. And I thought, oh, I guess that is novel, because at some point, pretty much every major star has played either a cop or a detective. So it was Paul Newman's turn. I'm just a sucker for these kinds of movies where there's a mystery and it's an interesting mystery, but it's almost secondary to just sort of watching this guy navigate all of these people and all these characters and this whole town. And that was really kind of the thrill of the movie for me, was just kind of the almost kind of like a hangout movie, even though there's, you know, a decent mystery. That was less compelling to me than just watching Paul Newman kind of work his way through this movie.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I love the way it opens. I think, you know, the sort of
the
morning
thing with the coffee grounds.
Well, all that, the whole morning routine. I think that's a fun thing to see. Like, basically, Paul Newman wakes up. He's on a pullout couch. He doesn't look like he slept particularly well. He grabs a bunch of ice from this tiny fridge, throws it in the sink, and dunks his face in it, and then goes to make coffee. He's out of coffee. He grabs an old filter from the trash.
But there's that moment where he debates how much of a, not a scumbag, but like how kind of burned out am I? Yeah, I guess I'm burned out enough to reuse this coffee filter.
It's just a great character setup moment. And then, you know, he finishes all that and you see him leave what you thought was basically his apartment. Turns out it's his office.
Yeah.
This is where he lives and works. So that just sort of adds another level of like, okay, sort of hand to mouth living, you know, not necessarily blowing the doors off in terms of the money that's rolling in from his private eye business. But yeah, it's a good setup, you know, with Lauren Bacall asking him to find her husband. Yeah. And then, you know, like I mentioned, the sort of tangential players, you know, Robert Wagner, Shelley Winters, Strother Martin, all of them have an interesting role to play in sort of helping or not helping him figure out what's going on. But yeah, you're right. It's more of a hangout kind of thing. I dig that idea.
Well, and they're all such specific types where everybody he encounters, you know, they really only get a handful of scenes, but you kind of know who they are right away. I mean, the scene with him at the table with Shelley Winters is so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
And she's not in the movie a ton, you know, she factors into it a little bit, but it's just, again, it's this series of sort of memorable encounters and watching the way that he kind of works people and knows who to be and what to say, except for when he doesn't, and it, you know, bites him in the ass and he gets punched in the face or something. It's just, this is exactly from the opening scene where he's sleeping in his office. I was like, oh, this is the exact kind of detective movie that I love, you know, just kind of sleeping in his clothes, barely getting by, just kind of not a, you know, not a bad guy, but a little bit of a low life because, you know, he just doesn't have a ton of cases and an ex-wife hounding him for money. I mean, all this stuff is so like, oh yeah, this is exactly the kind of movie that I'm into. And I'm wondering how many detective movies I've seen, because I'm just now getting around to seeing Harper. I'm wondering how many of the detective movies I've seen or the PI movies I've seen are directly influenced by this one, you know, where you're circling back around to sort of not the one that started it, obviously, because this genre goes all the way back to, you know, Philip Marlowe. But it has a more kind of a contemporary feel than, you know, kind of the classic Sam Spade, Philip Marlowe movies. Yeah, no, I really dug it.
That's cool. Yeah, no, you're right. It's a great, I think Paul Newman was definitely a dude who enjoyed this sort of character, you know, just a downtrodden sort of underdog. I'm thinking The Verdict, you know, a character where you're like, this guy's barely competent and yet somehow is able to sort of, you know, solve the case or generally figure things out. And I guess I've always kind of liked him playing that kind of underdog. He plays it well, I think.
Well, and it's so much more interesting because I think he understood something about himself, which is that to be a more interesting actor, or maybe just to challenge himself, or, you know, who knows, he kind of had to play these parts where the men that he was playing were deeply flawed. Because think about it. I mean, he's the best looking human being on the planet. He's incredibly charismatic. You know, he has so much going for him that to just watch him like coast and be awesome the way that a lot of other male movie stars have kind of been, you know, think about one of his contemporaries, Robert Redford. I like Robert Redford a lot. I really like watching Robert Redford in movies. But a lot of times Robert Redford is just kind of awesome, right? Like, he's very handsome. He's very charming. Things are kind of working out for him. And Paul Newman kind of pushes back against some of his innate gifts. And that to me is so much more interesting.
Yeah, I think I totally agree. Yeah. And I think it takes a certain kind of superstar actor. And by the way, he's a pretty unassuming superstar.
Yes.
To be able to allow yourself to be humiliated and to take risks on characters. I just talked about The Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean, which I watched a week or two ago with my dad on Blu-ray. And that's another like strange character that, you know, is not, you know, it's not like straight up handsome leading man material. It's kind of a weirdo character ultimately. So yeah, I just think his choices are fascinating. And I think some of the best actors in the history of movies are the ones who weren't afraid to embarrass themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, so this disc has a commentary from Mr. William Goldman. Were you able to check it out at all? What did you think if you were?
I was able to check out some of it. I didn't get all the way through it, but I mean,
sure.
It's just always fun to listen to William Goldman talk. I've reread his books a number of times. I just think he has such interesting insight and things to say about how stories are told and how to crack scripts and all that kind of stuff. So I could listen to him talk all day.
I was very happy in New York while they were shooting, and I got a phone call that said, write a credit sequence. And I panicked, and I thought, what do you mean, write a credit? I have no idea how to do that. I don't know what it would be, blah, blah, blah. Detective movies like this or stories traditionally begin when the detective meets the person who hires him. In this case, as you'll see shortly, Lauren McCall. And I thought, should I write a phone call? Hello, this is Lou Harper. And that would be boring. So I got the notion that he had to get up. And so I wrote the credit sequence. And just as in Butch Cassidy, the moment that everybody talked about in those years when it came out was the jump off the cliff. The moment everybody talked about in Harper was the credit sequence and the coffee. It was a huge laugh. You'll have to trust me on that. In movie theaters, when he realizes he's out of coffee, when he makes the coffee old, and all of a sudden that way. And it was a huge... When I finally saw the movie, I don't see my movies. It's no fun for me. Anyway, when I finally saw it, I was stunned that there was this huge laugh, etc. And what that did was it started the movie on rails. They liked the main guy. And that was huge, because when you're doing this kind of a movie, all you have really is your main character. And if they didn't like him or found him boring, etc., we would have been in deep trouble.
Yeah, no, I think it's a very entertaining commentary. He's got a real specific sort of world-weary from the Hollywood point of view perspective. And obviously he's written books about it, a few of them. I do remember reading Adventures in the Screen Trade when I was a little younger and enjoying that. I think that was one of my first sort of peaks inside Hollywood a little bit, you know. I don't know if you're a fan of his books as well as his screenplays.
But. Yeah, no, I've read them multiple times. I'm a big fan of the last one he wrote, I think, was Which Lie Did I Tell? I was just rewatching Memoirs of an Invisible Man because Scream Factory had just put it out. And the whole time in the back of my head, I have his stories about working on that script and Chevy Chase wanting to pursue the loneliness of invisibility. And that's just in my head the whole time when I'm thinking about, oh, this movie doesn't totally work. And why is that? Oh, right. The loneliness of invisibility.
All right, I got to read that one. I haven't read that book yet, and I didn't realize he touched on that script in it.
It's so. Yeah, it's really good.
I got to check that out. Okay, so that is Harper on Blu-ray from Warner Archive, and it looks really good, of course, as I find most Warner Archive Blu-rays do. Next up is Gumshoe from 1971.
You all know him, so let's give a nice Broadway welcome to our own Eddie Gindley.
Tommy Wright, folks. You may not remember the face, but you'll never forget the suit. Thank you, Tommy.
Naughty.
Thank you. Nobody's a great guy. Great guy.
Eddie Gindley, small-time club comedian who wants to be a big somebody. All he needs is an angle.
What do you want to do?
Write the Maltese Falcon. I want to record Blue Suede Shoes, and I want to play Las Vegas.
They've done the first two.
That's the rumor.
You're a bloody nut.
I owe it all to you, Doc.
What's this?
I'm advertising.
There's no law against wishing you were Humphrey Bogart, but if you advertise for trouble, you may get more than you bargain for.
I'm looking for Gindley. Gindley, the private investigator.
Oh, I'm the comedian. The private investigator is out. What do you want with him?
I have a job for him.
Oh, what kind of a job?
It's a private investigating kind of a job.
Make your play. What's the pitch?
It's all in the packet. We want results.
Broad at the shoulder, narrow at the hip, and everyone knows you don't give no lip to Big Ed.
A fat fee from a fat man, and a heater he needs like a hole in the head. It's not his bag at all, but Gindley bluffed his way in. Now he has to keep playing.
Who are you?
I live here.
Uh-huh. You want to hear anything special?
Play Melancholy Baby.
How does that go again? Gindley.
Gindley what?
Gindley, Cole, and Eddie.
Wyatt, Cole, and Allison, go away.
Take off your specs. Listen, little lady, you and I better go for a walk.
I have an essay to write, and I cannot spare the time to chew the fat with you. Where can we meet?
Son, that's not just the money. If it was, I wouldn't mind. It's my reputation. I couldn't hold up my head if I was hustled out of the job by an amateur like you.
What's an entertainer doing with a gun, Mr. Gindley?
I use it in the act. It helps to keep the audience on their toes.
Look, I'm not amused, Gindley.
No, no. Well, have you heard the one about the queer parrot?
Ever since the Maltese Falcon, Eddie's wanted to be a gumshoe. Now let's see what kind of a bogeyman he really is.
Move an inch, fat man, and I'll yell copper.
Play it again, Gindley.
He's looking at you, Gindley.
This one is directed by Stephen Frears. I think it's his first movie.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's his first movie. And this one concerns one Albert Finney, who is a nightclub comedian named Eddie Gindley. And he definitely like has sort of fantasies about, you know, being a private eye, and decides he's going to put an ad in the paper claiming that he is, and see what happens. And it's an interesting, he sort of gets embroiled in this rather labyrinthine plot involving some shady folks. And I don't know, this is an interesting one. This is definitely an interesting one for me. There are what are your thoughts? How do you feel about this one?
So this is my first viewing of this one as well. And
all right.
It's a movie that I either need to sit with longer or see again. I dug it in that it was, you know, Albert Finney is always interesting, although the movie opens with him saying he's 31. I've never felt older in my life because I assumed Albert Finney was born 60. So how the hell am I older than Albert Finney at any point? And it was kind of a cool counterpart to see this same kind of a story, but told from a very British perspective. And it certainly has a unique take on sort of the private eye genre, where in some ways it's almost deconstructing it because he's this detective who knows he's part of a detective story. But I feel like of the three, this maybe clicked with me the least.
That's fair. No, it's fair. I might agree with you. I might agree with you. And I hadn't seen the last one, but I'd seen these other two, or maybe, you know what? I might not have seen Harper before. I might have seen The Drowning Pool for some weird reason, which is the follow-up film to Harper, and thought that I had seen the first Harper movie, because I think, as I recall, my video store that I worked at in college had the Drowning Pool, but I don't think we had Harper. So I was like, well, I want to see the A. Paul Newman detective movie, so I think I'm going to watch the Drowning Pool. But yeah, I don't know if I'd seen Harper. So anyway, Gumshoe I had seen. It is interesting, like you say. It's got your traditional private eye voiceover, which is one of the tropes of the genre that I actually kind of like. I know a lot of people, you know, find voiceover a crutch or whatever, but I don't know. Private eye movies, I feel like it's just sliding into some like warm pajamas that just came out of the dryer to hear a private eye voiceover. It's just calming to me for some reason.
No, absolutely. It's like buddy cop movies for me. Yeah. I just like, I can watch any one of them at any time.
That is a good policy. And I'm a pretty big fan of those myself, but yeah, I just like the idea, I guess, if of the things I like about the movie, I like the idea that he's a nightclub MC who actually calls bingo. I just felt like, you know, they were trying to make him more and more like lowly and embarrassing. But he does take one opportunity to do a short stand-up set, and he's not terrible. He's okay. But anyway, I just thought Finney is not bad at playing a sort of a cad slash underdog himself, although he's got a different kind of charisma than Paul Newman. They're both incredible and magnetic personalities on screen, but yeah, Albert Finney's a little different, and he can play kind of an asshole in a way that you're like, oh yeah, you are kind of an asshole or something. I don't know. But it's still compelling. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. I do like the setup. You know, he gets the first call that he gets, he meets a mysterious man in a dark hotel room and gives him a package with £1,000 and a picture of a woman and a gun. And so I don't know. I think that's an interesting setup. And then he sort of just has to figure out what he's supposed to do with all that. And the only other downside to the movie is there's some like sort of racist stuff in it.
Yeah.
That kind of took me out a little bit. He's not necessarily a fan of I think there's only one black character in the movie, and they definitely they don't get along too well, and he's not particularly nice about it. So that was a bit of a bummer too, but I don't know, I guess maybe it's part of the time, the story. I'm not exactly sure, but that was not something I expected to see from Albert Finney necessarily.
No, and I does that have anything to do with why it was kind of hard to come by for so many years?
Could be. I mean, it really could be, because I think I looked around and I saw some reviews that mentioned it, or so it's not something that I feel like was totally glossed over either at the time or recently. I don't know, but it could be a thing. Anyway, I still think it's an interesting movie. It's an interesting first film from Stephen Frears, who would go on to make some really great stuff. So I guess I'm always kind of interested in beginnings. And from that point of view, it's kind of neat. The Blu-ray has an interview with Frears. It has...
There's a lot of people interviewed on the Blu-ray.
Yeah, Neville Smith on Gumshoe, Michael Medwin, editor Charles Reese, production designer Michael Seymour, and actor Tom Kempinski, and then something. There's a debut short film called The Burning from 1968, 32 minutes. Was there anything in the extras that stood out to you at all?
Here's where I sort of reveal myself to be a garbage person, because I started watching, as though you weren't already sure. I started watching all of the interviews.
Yeah.
And like 5 minutes into every single one, I was just like, oh Christ. And I had to switch to the next one, because they all just back way up and start talking about sort of what led them to being part of the movie. And I get impatient with that stuff. Like, I remember reading, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's like 800-page biography, and it's literally 300 pages of like bodybuilding in Austria. And I'm just like, can you just make the Terminator already, please? Like, why? Get to the part that I don't want to read about, like the Beatles growing up. Like, just when they write "Love Me Do," start with them writing "Love Me Do." So that was a little bit of these interviews. Like, I would start one, and if they didn't start talking about Gumshoe right away, I was just like, oh no, let me try the next one. So I saw a little bit of all of them.
That's cool. No,
I hung in the longest on the Stephen Frears one, because I thought it was interesting. He talks about, it sounds like he kind of got the job because he like shadowed Albert Finney when Albert Finney directed a film that ended up bombing.
Gotcha.
Cool. What is the movie called? I'm trying to look it up right now.
Yeah, I think that was my favorite too, and I didn't get through all of them myself, honestly. And I'm with you. You know, the whole idea of, you know, they say the best way to approach scenes in movies is get in late, get out early. And yeah. I feel like that can be applied to a lot of things, really.
Charlie Bubbles, by the way, is the name of the movie that Albert Finney was directing, which I have not seen.
No, I have not seen that either. Like I said, I do think it's cool from the point of view of, like, Stephen Frears starts here, and at some point, we get High Fidelity, you know? So, I mean,
right.
I think that's kind of an interesting progression, you know?
At some point, we get Mary Reilly.
It's true. So I don't know. Have you had a lot of experience with Indicator Blu-rays thus far?
This might have been my first. I know you kind of are tweeting about them all the time and talk about them a lot on your show. Like, I know you just did the Modern Romance show, but this, I think, was my first from Indicator.
Cool. Well, hopefully, you know, maybe something they do in the future. They're almost all region free for folks that don't know. And I think they do a pretty solid job. They are one of my favorite labels working right now, and a lot of it has to do with the time that they put into the extras. Because they, you know, I mean, granted, you're right. Some of the interviews, you know, you could get to the movie itself faster, but you know, that's just a certain approach, I think. But I have come across some really good ones, and I did talk about on the Modern Romance episode. The interview with the cinematographer is great, and the commentary they had done was great. So I think they do a great job, and if you're a movie fan and one of the titles that they are putting out strikes you, it's definitely worth a blind pickup, not a blind pickup in that you haven't dealt with them before. So I'm glad to have potentially exposed you to them for the first time.
Yes, absolutely. They do all those, like, Hammer boxes, right?
Yeah, they do the Hammer boxes. They did the Sinbad boxes, or Harryhausen boxes, I should say. They did a great Western box set with Bud Bedeker Westerns. I think that's my favorite they've done, and maybe my favorite release of the year. I really, yeah. I love those movies, though. I'm just a huge fan of those movies. I was on Wrong Reel a couple weeks back, three, four weeks back, talking about those movies, and I just love them. So I was kind of in the bag for it, but they did a good job with the set, I thought. So I was excited about that. Anyway, that is it for Gumshoe from Indicator, and we're moving on to the Kathleen Turner-led V.I. Warshawski from 1991.
W.A.R.
Private investigator.
S.H.A.W.
You don't look much like a private detective to me.
S.K.I.
Who are you?
Warshawski. V.I. Warshawski.
Kathleen Turner is V.I. Warshawski.
What does the V stand for?
Virtuous.
And the I?
Inquisitive. Looking for something?
Just because she's a woman.
You know how hard it is to get blood out of cashmere?
Doesn't mean she's always a lady.
Get to the point, bonehead. Sorry about that, guys. You know what this is?
It's a nutcracker.
You know what we do with nutcrackers?
You let a broad do this to you?
V.I. Warshawski.
Babe alert!
What's that V stand for?
My first name.
You're a funny lady.
Try beautiful. It works much better, believe me.
I'm hiring you to find out who killed my dad.
Being a detective is no job for a girl like you.
These guys are playing hardball.
I got this feeling in my gut.
Woman's intuition. Get off the case.
Never underestimate a woman.
Kathleen Turner is
Warshawski.
Wachowski. B.I. Warshawski.
You're about this close.
What's that? Your IQ or the size of your
V.I. Warshawski.
My friends call me Vic.
Now, you had seen this one, I'm guessing?
You know what? I saw this one in theaters because my parents were divorced. Oh, so geez. I went to the movies with my dad a lot, and if it was playing, we went.
So it wasn't even about Kathleen Turner. It was just like, a movie is on, we'll go.
Kind of. I mean, it was like, we knew it was shot in Chicago, and it had gotten garbage reviews, although I can't remember. Either Ebert was the only one who liked it or he also hated it. but I remember it getting really brutally ripped up critically when it came out.
So was that the last time you had seen it?
That was the last time I had seen it until this viewing. Oh, okay. So Ebert gave it 3 stars. He's the only critic in America who kind of liked it.
Very nice. This is, I'll just do my thing. On the back here, it says, beautiful Kathleen Turner stars as V.I. Warshawski, a tough-talking, sexy Chicago private eye who knows how to use her 2 most lethal weapons, her powerful charm and curvy legs. And after she's hired by, by Kat, Angela Goethals, the 13-year-old daughter of a murdered ex-hockey star, V.I. gets caught up in an action-packed thriller involving money, murder, and the Windy City's most notorious hoods. This time, it's going to take everything she's got to track down and outfox the key suspects. Earning high praise for her electrifying performance, apparently only from Roger Ebert, Kathleen Turner is simply irresistible as a smart, sexy detective you'll find yourself cheering for. The strong supporting cast includes J.O. Sanders, Charles Durning, Wayne Knight, and Stephen Root, directed by Jeff Canoe of Tough Guys and Revenge of the Nerds fame. So what were your thoughts upon, what do you remember from seeing it as a kid versus now?
I mean, I feel like as a kid, there just wasn't much there for me. I don't know how much there was for me. And as an adult, I will say, I mean, I definitely like enjoyed it. The movie is goofy and pretty dumb, but like in a fun way. I enjoy, you know, seeing Chicago. I like movies made from around this time, these kind of mid-budget movies that have a ton of character actors, maybe a few movies before they started popping up in everything. So every time a new person shows up, you're like, oh, look, it's, you know, early Stephen Root. Hey, look, it's J.O. Sanders again. so that's always super fun. Kathleen Turner, obviously, is fun. I just, you know, the mystery isn't especially interesting. And I have a real allergy to like snarky kids in movies. And this is when the kid shows up like in Ford Fairlane, I'm not into it whatever. So I don't, you know, as much as I may enjoy Angela Goethals in Home Alone or in Behind the Mask, her character just is a little bit irritating in this movie. More than anything, I was just kind of shocked at some of the stuff in the movie that you just know they would never get away with now. There's that whole scene when they're trying to embarrass J.O. Sanders because he's with a woman, and the stuff they're saying that's being played for laughs in 1991. I'm just watching it like, oh my gosh, they would not be able to say any of this in a movie now.
Wow. I'm sorry. I'm just, my mind was momentarily rocked when you said Angela Goethals was in Behind the Mask, and I was like, holy shit, it is her. Watched that, and I was like, oh my god, wow, that's crazy. Anyway, there's definitely some stuff in here that plays only for the late 80s sensibility. I like movies from the early 90s because they really are kind of 80s movies, and I just love 80s movies. So this feels like an 80s movie, and having Charles Durning and Wayne Knight in it definitely helps. I don't know, these novels, it's based on a series of novels, and they must be pretty gritty because she actually gets beat up pretty good in these movies. And that was a little shocking for me, I think, because I didn't expect it. And I was like, okay, movie, all right, fine, we're going to go there. That's all right. That's fine. The stakes have been raised, and so it's not just a goofy, you know, sledgehammer kind of scenario or something like that. And don't get me wrong, I love Sledgehammer, but, you know, you could think that that's what this is going to be, but then she gets her ass kicked, and you're like, okay, that's not necessarily... I mean, yeah, Sledge would hit anybody, but in this case, it just felt a little more real when that happened. And I also like that this movie has, like, an old-fashioned reporter character and a romance with the reporter character, which you don't see too much in modern films. You don't see, like, reporter characters that much anymore, I don't feel like... You know, maybe I'm wrong.
No, that's because journalism is dying.
It's true. It is absolutely true. But this guy felt like a reporter, like out of like His Girl Friday or something, you know? Like
yeah, for sure.
You know, just old fashioned style stuff. So you don't like, you know, snarky kids. Are you a Shane Black fan or not really? I'm just thinking.
No, weirdly enough, I am a Shane Black fan.
His kids aren't always snarky. They're more just precocious sometimes.
Yeah, like Daniel Harrison, Last Boy Scout, okay. Precocious kid in Iron Man 3, don't love it. precocious kid in The Nice Guys, love it.
Yeah, she's great.
You're the guy who beat up my dad.
Hey, no. Sucker punched your dad. Big difference. But don't worry. He just did it for money.
You beat people up and charge money?
Yeah. Sad, isn't it?
That's really your job?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
So, how much would you charge to beat up my friend Janet?
What?
How much you got?
$30.
Oh, $30.
Apple pie.
Is she a big girl?
She's tall.
All right.
Super annoying.
Apple pie.
She's always mean to me.
$30. That's good. This conversation is over.
We're just talking.
That's cool. No, I was just,
one? Yeah.
Immediately, I love Shane Black, and I was just immediately like, oh, snarky kids, or kids in, you know, it just immediately made me think of him, so I just had to ask. Let's see. Was there anything else about the movie that stood out to you?
just her shoes.
Her shoes.
Her gym shoes. Because I'm like, yeah, that's what this person would be wearing. Like, I'm glad that they paid attention to that detail. It's just a weird, like almost like they couldn't pick a tone, you know,
yeah.
Because it
yeah.
is weirdly light and comedic. And then all of a sudden someone will beat her up. Apparently the kind of more comedic aspects were added from the book. I just read a little bit about it, and the book, I guess, is pretty serious. And the author of the book was not happy that they kind of went more comic with the screenplay, which would be fine. But then, like you said, every once in a while, something really gritty. I mean, when you think about sort of the way that the whole mystery plays out and what happens in the last few minutes, it's dark, you know?
Yeah.
And so for that to coexist in a movie that's also kind of goofy, it's confused, but very entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. 100% across the board. Definitely an odd mix of tones. I will say that I did love Steven Root when he shows up mm-hmm. He was like the head of a meat packing plant, I think. And so immediately I got like this Prime Cut vibe sort of, but I know
yes.
it wasn't nearly, you know, Marianne or anything like that. It was just, you know, an underhanded dude who his business happens to be meat packing. I didn't necessarily feel like there were bodies necessarily, but anyway, I thought that was a great intro because Steven Root is truly amazing and he just kills it in like the 2 minute scene that he's got.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah. I was talking about, her getting beat up. Wayne Knight, I have in my notes, Wayne Knight backhands Kathleen Turner, which that character I found to be kind of disturbing because I guess I'm used to a certain kind of Wayne Knight and he's a son of a bitch in this movie, like a
yeah.
real piece of shit. And like, I mean, again, that plays to the sort of grittiness of the movie, which takes it in a direction that I guess I'd rather have grittiness than goofiness in a Private Eye movie personally. But yeah, that was weird because I just didn't expect that. I didn't expect him to be such a piece of shit.
The thing about Wayne Knight is he will not be pinned down. You know, you think you know him. You think he's just your friendly neighborhood computer programmer. And meanwhile, he's got a shaving cream can filled with dinosaur DNA. He's not going to be boxed in by your rules, man.
Hell no, dude. Hell no. He will always be Newman. That's cool. There is a commentary on this with director Jeff Canoe, which is moderated by Mark Edward Hoik. Did you get a chance to listen to any of this?
I completely missed it.
I didn't realize
there was I blew it, man.
No, you didn't. No, no worries. It's interesting. I liked it, and I like Mark Edward Hoik actually quite a bit. Like I've interviewed him. I follow him on Twitter. He's a great movie dude. I wasn't sure how he and Jeff Canoe were vibing. Like Mark speaks in a certain way where he'll sometimes take a second to sort of get out what he wants to say, or he'll examine something. And I felt like Canoe was just like, let's keep going here. And there were points where I thought he was going to get irritated with him. And that's a weird tension when you're suddenly in the room with two people that you're like, oh, are you guys not getting along? This is awkward. I don't want to be here.
I may not be able to listen to this now. I do not deal with that well.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you should to see if I'm crazy. But I felt like there were times when he was a little short with Mark in yeah. answering some of his questions and just generally seemed impatient. But, you know, had some interesting things to say. I feel like there was one note I have here is that he said the studio wanted to make this movie into Paper Moon, which I think is interesting. Like, I guess Paper Moon with her and the daughter character, you know, kind of having this more of a mentor relationship kind of thing. And I don't know that they went that way fully, but I just thought it was interesting that Paper Moon was even referred to in 1991 and in this Kathleen Turner movie. So I was entertained by that. But it's a fun commentary. I think I like Jeff Canoe as a director. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, Revenge of the Nerds, problematic, but still a movie that I liked as a kid and that I think has some interesting things about it. And I've always thought of him as the director of that. I like Tough Guys. I think he did Gotcha. So he's done some films that I think are interesting. So it was neat to hear his voice and to hear him pronounce his name, because I had a friend for the longest time that he would always call him Kanu. Mm. And so, you know, you don't immediately go to Canoe because it just seems kind of like an odd name. But anyway, so it's great when you can hear the voice of somebody you've known for a long time and they pronounce their name correctly and you're like, Oh, that's interesting. Anyway, so in the order of preference, you liked Harper, V.I. Warshawski, and then Gumshoe.
I feel like a bad person for saying that because I put V.I. Warshawski in the middle, but I think that's what I'm going with.
I think I'm kind of with you. I think I put on V.I. Warshawski on a Friday night. I was home alone, and my wife was out, and I was like, nope, this is pretty good for right now. You know, this is a fun movie for a nice evening viewing. And yeah, it's flawed and there's some problems, but I don't know. I had a good time with it. So anyway, well, thank you, sir, for coming on and talking Private Eye movies with me. I do appreciate it.
No, thank you. Anytime. I love these movies.
I may have some more. I had a whole stack of Private Eye movies. Like, I think I had, what else did I have? I had the Robert Mitchum double feature of Farewell, My Lovely, and the Big Sleep remake.
Okay. Uh-huh,
and then like Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. And I think I had like one more that was, so maybe at some point we can sequelize this and do another Private Eye round. But I do like a good thematic, you know, tying of things together, sort of.
Warner Archives got to get Zero Effect out on Blu-ray.
Oh, do they ever? Do they ever? I mean, that's one where I feel like now that they're licensing to Criterion, maybe it could show up there. It feels more like a Warner Archive title, like one that they'll put out. But I think that's a Criterion-worthy movie, and I think would be perfectly at home in the Criterion collection in my mind.
That was one of the first, like the weekend I bought my DVD player, that was one of the first. It had just come out on DVD. It was like one of the first three DVDs I bought.
Nice. Did you listen to the commentary right away?
Oh, sure, yeah.
It was funny because he does that thing in the commentary, which I love, where he like throughout the whole commentary, he creates like a phrase that you can say to him if you see him to indicate that you've listened to the commentary. And it was like, there is a distant rumbling something or something like that. I can't remember what it is now. But the one time he came into my work, I was on my lunch. He came into my video store job circa like 2001. And I was on my lunch and I didn't know. And I wanted to talk to him about Freaks and Geeks. And I wanted to tell him that I knew the phrase. And I didn't get a chance to. I was so disappointed. But
that's probably why there's no Blu-ray.
It's my fault. Yeah. It's totally my fault. I do think it's awesome that it was one of your first DVD purchases, because it's fucking amazing and really, really does need a Blu-ray badly.
Yeah.
We should do a Blu-ray wanted. I should start a Blu-ray wanted, you know, episode set up. We just talk about a movie that should be on Blu-ray.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. There's too many.
Oh yeah. No, that's endless. That could be a show unto itself, really. Yeah. Honestly. But Patrick, thank you so much. I'd love to have you back on if you're amenable. I know you're a busy man with many obligations, but
literally anytime you ask, I would be happy to be on.
You're far too kind, sir. You're far too kind. Where can people find you online? I don't usually do this, but I'm trying to be more considerate. So,
Thanks. I have a site and a podcast called F This Movie at fthismovie.com. And there's a Twitter just at F This Movie. And my Twitter is at Patrick Bromley. And then, sometimes I'm on Corpse Club over at dailydead.com.
Very nice. Very nice. And you're writing for some other places too, right?
I am. Yeah, I write sometimes for Bloody Disgusting as well.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, thank you again, sir. Greatly appreciated. I will be in touch soon about some future plans, I think.
Awesome. Yes, thank you.
All right, everyone have a lovely and Blu-ray filled week, and I will talk to you very soon. Goodbye.